Mayor Holmgren?
Here.
Katie Holmlund?
Here.
Carrie Kay?
Here.
Nicole Olson?
Here.
Jay Lister?
Here.
And Charlotte Martin is also present.
Yay, we're all here. Great. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. I'll make a motion to approve the February 20th agenda.
I'll second.
Motion's been made and seconded by Nicole. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Next, unfortunately, there's some illnesses still running around. It is only February, so our student presentation with the fifth grade poetry group will be delayed. Hopefully, we'll get to see them next month then. Or that's by spring break, isn't it? Or no, we're doing it after spring break. So we might get to see them then. Next, we'll move on to our student representative report, Charlotte Martin.
Okay, so the biggest news for students recently was the proposed change to the schedule where we have 7 periods a day instead of like alternating block periods like we have now. So students felt like if they had all 7 periods every day, the instructional time would be rushed and there would be more homework expectations every night for each class. So some of the feedback we heard from people telling ASB, we don't need this, it was fine how it was, everything's going to be rushed. I'm glad to be graduating. So students were pretty concerned about how this is going to affect how they can manage their workload and spacing things. So they are pretty worried about this, and the ASB, we are against it too. And we just wanted to express that we're worried about how this schedule is going to affect people's ability to stay on top of things. And that's about it, unless there are any questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Next, we'll move on to our guest speaker, Susan Erickson. Ms. Erickson is of Petersburg Wrangell Insurance, and she'll give us an update on our insurance costs and coverages and the trends that will affect the school district. Come on up.
You.
Uh-huh. We'll put you at the front.
Pardon me?
We put you at the front instead of making you wait.
Wow. Great. Thank you so much. I am so happy to be here. It's been a long time since I have been here. It was actually right before COVID. It's the last time, and we've been doing an annual, you know, talk, and then Erica felt for a little bit like, yeah, we've got continuity in staff and school board, so maybe we can take a year off, and who would have known it would be 3. So here we are. So I'm here to give you a little bit of recap of what's happening in the insurance world, which will affect the district's budget in the coming year. And just a little recap, our coverages with Alaska Public Entity Insurance, which I'll refer to as APEI. The borough is also with APEI. A lot of school districts, municipalities, statewide are with APEI. They are a pool, which means we're a member of the pool, and pools were established to try and keep rates about the same, but we also share in losses with our fellow pool members. So giving you a glimpse of kind of what's happening is that APEI, Alaska Public Entity, they provide the first layer of our insurance protection. Then they have to go out to the global insurance market and they buy reinsurance on their risk tolerance down here. Well, the global reinsurance market has gone crazy because there have been so many things in the last 10 years, 5 years, 4 years that have happened worldwide, which are affecting insurance rates that we're paying here in Petersburg, Alaska. There have been the windstorms, there have been wildfires, there have been floods, earthquakes, the whole bit, globally. And when the global rates go up and then APEI has claims on their first layer, they have to pass that on to their members. So prices have gone up. Well, now you couple that with what happened in COVID and post-COVID with supply chain and whatnot,
and I guess some specifics here. The main focus has been the replacement costs of buildings. And you guys don't necessarily live in this world, but we live in it all day long in terms of people have fires, places burned down, and then how much does it cost to rebuild it? Well, APEI has gone through for the last several years, and rather than us having to hire an appraiser to come in and say, this is what it's going to cost to rebuild all these buildings, they do a trended price increase. And for years, it was 1 or 2% for inflation. Prior to 2020, it was 1, 2, 1, 2, and then 2021 hit, and it was 10. And 2022 hit, inflation was 10. In 2023, and it was 4. Thank goodness now they're saying we're getting close to 2. I mean, we're somewhere around 3 right now, but the goal is to get to 2. So they found that most school districts are grossly underinsured, or were grossly underinsured. So they increased the coverage for us. They took it to a year ago, towards the end of fiscal year 23, they figured that it was $550 a square foot to replace these buildings. So everything went to $550 a square foot. That meant $12 million more in property coverage here for the district. Well, that's fine, $12 million, big deal, really. Except insurance rates for property had gone up on top of that. So now we had to insure for higher, and the rates went up higher. So our property rates last year went up like 30%. But the good news is, Shannon, this year, we're hoping it's going to be flat, which is really good. There have been less losses, although they are doing a trended value again. And I just got the numbers. I looked at them, and it's roughly they want to increase our buildings about 600,000. We don't care about 600,000. It's negligible when it comes to replacing the buildings. Curious thing to me, they left these buildings, actually the administration building and the elementary school, at 550 a square foot. But this building, which, you know, goes from the stairs at the middle school to the records board at the aquatic center, they bumped that to 575 a square foot, which probably is not too far off, really. It's gotten really expensive. So property, we're expecting it to be fairly flat. I'll know more in a month. Liability, though, that's been a kind of a problem because of sexual abuse and molestation allegations and actual claims. Most of those, I mean, you guys read about them, you hear about them, school districts. A lot of them have been up north. There have been plenty in Southeast Alaska also. So that's driving the cost of liability insurance, as well as police professional liability claims and employment related practices. And those three things bundled together are yielding more expense in liability insurance. Not too much, but I think probably at this point, about 5% more on the general liability side. Cars are more expensive. Fixing cars is more expensive, you know, all that, but whatever. We're not going to worry about that. The good news on the insurance front is workers' compensation, again, for another year in a row, because it's like the seventh year in a row. Mm-hmm. The rates are going down again in 2024. And the district here be very proud of your administration, your principals, your teachers, everyone, because the claims, we have very few claims in the district for teachers. Consequently, our credit, which is called experience modification, is 28%, which is just huge. It's a modifier of 0.72. I mean, it's like huge. So that's great. APEI is undergoing some changes right now, and we've been with them for a really long time. We love them. I mean, they're really good. They're responsive. They're good with claims. They've got nice products. They've got competitive pricing. They offer us resources. They come down here. They walk into all the closets and come up with reports of what we need to do differently and liability and whatnot, training that's available. it's important for us to take advantage of those training opportunities and credits we can get off the insurance premiums. But API is undergoing changes, as well as the main competitor, which is the Alaska Municipal League Joint Insurance Arrangement. So you got these two competing pools, and they are both thinking, I think we should merge, because they do some things really, really well. APEI does some things really, really well. And if it's going to benefit the districts, the municipalities, and the membership, that's what they're going to do. So in the coming 2 years, we're going to watch these two entities try and merge and have better things to offer to us as members. So I'm watching that. Karen Morrison, she was on the board for, I don't know how many years, the last 3 years, maybe. Yeah. Maybe it's been four, something like that. An advocate for us and for products and whatnot. Steve Giesbrecht was off the board, but he may be back on the board. So we have some a voice. And Petersburg is an important member to that last public entity group. So we're watching how things are moving forward to it and how it will affect things here. We want great coverage. We want them to be able to help us be better in what we do. So one other thing I just want to mention was cyber. And cyber's been like, oh my God, cyber. Sick of cyber. But the good news on cyber also is that things appear to be pretty quiet. There haven't been a lot of major hacks that have gone to the insurance level within our state of Alaska public entity network, which is good, which means rates might be a little bit stable. I know that John and his team have done a lot of things in terms of security on the network and on laptops and all that kind of stuff. So we just need to stay cutting edge in front of that for protecting all of the data that somebody could access. So just to wrap it up, we're in a really good place in terms of the company, the carrier, APEI. They're great. We anticipate rates being fairly stable coming in the next year. Claims-wise, we had some issues a couple of years ago with the ice and then the fire and, you know, work comp. But other than that, we've been not too bad. So I'd be happy to entertain any questions if anyone has.
I will say their trainings, just to piggyback off of that, they are really good. We take advantage of them a lot. Shannon and I have been on several meetings and then talking about the consolidation. Mm-hmm. I do think there's some opportunities there that seem reasonable, and I think everybody's bringing good information to the table and trying to really work through, you know, what could be helpful overall for everybody. I agree. They're super helpful, super responsive.
Yeah. And I look forward to, I'm saying goodbye to my friend Erica and her position there. And I look forward to working with Robin as she takes over the helm there next year. And then Shannon is still kind of new, you know, and I'll just throw out there, we are a great resource for people to find out what happened or whatever. I was going through a file today and I found some MOUs that go back a long time. And I was like, Terry Erholtz? Wow, I forgot about that. You know what I mean?
Oh, I do.
Cool. But our office is there if you have questions on why is it like this, or how can we have the aquatic center, whatnot. So use us as a resource. It's our privilege to represent the district and provide the insurance for the district. We consider ourselves part of the team. And your statement here, statements of hope. Our statement of hope today is just that our insurance rates will remain fairly flat.
I like we'll it.
I have closing.
Carry on. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Robin, but Robin is listening in, and she said she's looking forward to working with you as well.
Oh, great.
Thanks, Susan. Yeah. All right. Any correspondence so far?
None.
Okay, we'll move on to comments from the audience unrelated to agenda items. Okay. Seeing none, comments from the audience related to agenda items? Okay, we'll move on to comments from board members. Okay, we'll move on to the consent agenda. I'll move to approve the consent agenda. Could I have a second?
I'll second.
Motion's been made and seconded by Katie. Any discussion? Okay, Mara, could you please call the roll?
Charlotte? Jay Lister?
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes.
Nicole Olson?
Yes.
Katie Holman?
Yes.
Carrie Case?
Yes. Okay, motion passes. Next, we'll move on to our administrative reports. We do have both of one of our elementary principal's report is sent to us, but she is not available. And this evening, she's celebrating, I believe, a birthday with her youngest. And then also, Mr. Cabral is not here for director of activities. So we won't be having those reports tonight. So we'll start with the superintendent report.
Okay. So just a few things to highlight from notes that I sent you out for the report. Negotiation process is continuing with the Associated Teachers of Petersburg, and that Sarah and Carrie are the board reps for that team. We had a great trip to the RTI-MTSS conference the end of January. We had a good team that went up there. It was really nice to have an people from all different levels in the district. That was nice, all the way elementary up through high school. It was great. The travel for that was supported by grant funding. We had a team of teachers that came back today from ASTE, the technology conference, and that was also well attended, and they're all coming back with all kinds of great ideas. And that was another grant-funded opportunity. Heather Kahn and I attended the legislative fly-in beginning of February, had the opportunity to participate in several panels and lots of meetings with legislators. I do think that there's a lot of support at the legislative level for funding and just support in general and recognition of how far off the mark we are at this point. If you aren't watching the news or listening to the news, that's a very different message that we're hearing from the governor. So at that point, and unfortunately he has a lot of power with his veto pen, and he has made it clear that he's going to use it if things don't go the way he wants them to. So that is frustrating, but we are continuing to hammer on it and testify and all those things. We have had a few people ask if they if we could maybe provide some help to people if they want to testify, or where to send things, or who to send them to, or how to call in, or whatever. I will say, and I said it earlier, the Legislative Information Office, if you don't take the newsletter from Matt Lichtenstein, it's very timely, it's well done. He puts all the information in there. That is a good listserv to be on. But we also would be willing to hold, you know, sessions or whatever. We could, if people wanted to come, they could bring pizza or something, and we could meet a library and we could talk about some of the legislation and how to communicate if people want to do that. So we're happy to set something like that up. As Robin Taylor's on there, as Mara just said, we continue to do transition work together. She was able to be at the RTI conference with us, which was great. And she's been involved in the teaching and learning grant, the 3-year grant. She's been attending those meetings with us and working to try to be a part of planning what's going to happen next, you know, and making that transition. So we appreciate her trying to balance a very busy principal job with transition work going forward. She will be here over spring break. She and I are going to hang out for 4 days over spring break. Not vacationing, but that's okay. Anyway, we will be working, so she'll be around. So if people are around in town and you want to pop by and visit or say hi, she'll be here. And then we do have a scheduled Borough Assembly work session on February 29th with all of you. And I think it's at 5:30?
It was pretty early, as remember. Then, oh, you guys are going to be.
Yeah, I think it might be 5.
I thought Jay's going to be racing there.
Or, I did tell her that. Wait, okay. She said they could push it if we need it.
Okay, so that will be a good opportunity, I think, to continue conversations about local funding as well.
Will that be broadcast on the radio?
I don't
know.
I don't think so.
Okay. Or sessions.
Yeah.
Okay.
They might be there and yeah.
Okay. It's at 5 o'clock.
Five.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the assembly chambers.
Are members of the public welcome to attend it?
I think so. Yeah, I think any work session.
It's an open meeting, so yeah.
Just like.
Come listen if you want.
Yeah, people can, I think, come sit and listen.
I'll piggyback a little bit on the how to contact legislatures, because you can go on the state's website and you can find, there is an email, you know, email address that shoots it out to all the House members and shoots it out all the Senate members. And that way you can send an email on your thoughts of school funding that way. But maybe we can help with some talking points of like, because not everybody maybe is up to speed on what the need is.
Yes, we are happy to do that. And then the other thing is just knowing, sometimes you need to know, it's good to target, because sometimes it's like House Finance is the one that's really hearing this, or Senate Finance is hearing this, or House Education is listening to this, you know, that kind of thing. And we do have really good support from our executive director. She she sends us lots of weekly updates. I know AASB sends things too, but I think those are helpful if we can help, you know, help people know what to craft and what we're talking about and which bill and, you know, all that stuff. So.
And the local legislative office, if people aren't aware, it's right next to Petersburg Insurance, just kind of tucked back a little bit. So.
Yeah. And that is,
he provides great help.
Great information. And he's happy to help people if they're nervous about testifying or anything like that. He's super helpful. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Next, we'll move on to middle school, high school principals report. Mr. King.
Sorry, Cindy is going to do shout outs for Heather.
Oh, okay. Yes, that's fine.
So yeah, Heather, Ms. Khan is not available, but she definitely wanted the shout outs to be heard on the radio for all the wonderful things that are happening at the elementary. So shout outs going to Casey Hammer and Dwight Jenkins for the book fair. Debbie Tice regarding the Battle of the Books and the Spelling Bee. So that was super successful and going on. Dwight Jenkins and Jay Stangreger for stepping up and helping with student supports as needed in that building, which has been fantastic. Savannah Sparrow for support also in that capacity. Vanessa Miller and the Student Council Reading Challenge and everything that encompassed, which is usually quite a bit. And then a $5,000 donation was made from the Petersburg Mental Health that went to the PI group. And so that was based on a grant that was written by Jessica Peterson, who made it happen. That is going to be used so that every student at the elementary is able to get a $10 book at the coming book fair, sponsored by Petersburg Mental Health, and the rest of the money is going to go to other events that are organized through PI. So thank you.
Wow.
For the add-on.
Thank you, Cindy. Okay, now we'll have our middle school, high school principal's report.
Evening. I don't have a whole lot to add. I just am willing to answer any questions on the scheduling question and also the parent teacher conference one, because those are two areas that have been kind of stirred up in a little bit, the last little bit. Go ahead.
Can I ask what prompted the change in scheduling?
We have a very unique and odd schedule here where only certain classes are on the block and some are not. So you have like first, fourth, and seventh are never on the block. And the other four periods are. Block schedules are really designed around even numbered schedule days so that you can have a full block where you have A's and B days and do it back and forth. Because we have a 7-period schedule and a 24-credit graduation requirement, dropping to a 6-period day leaves no latitude for study halls or anything like that. Going to an 8-period day would leave this wide open, would add a whole lot of different spots in there, but it would also make us question why we have a 24 credit graduation requirement, 32 credit available schedule. You'd have kids graduating probably sometime at the end of their junior year on a regular basis, the ones that be there, which is not a terrible thing, but it just depends on how you look at it. Also, some of the problems related to when we miss a school day like a Monday for snow or in service or something, then certain classes get hit for losing instructional time and others do not. And then you have to talk about flip-flopping your schedule around every other week or so to fix missing class schedules. The other thing related to block schedules is block schedules are designed to allow teachers to teach twice as much content in one day. We're not actually getting a lot of that. What we're getting is half a day of teaching and half a day of study time, which is nice, but it means that the content instruction is actually crammed into a much smaller time frame. So there's a lot of reasons for switching out. The recommendation would be to either do a traditional schedule or change our number of credits and class offerings and go to a full block rather than a partial. The partial is just very, very difficult to deal with. It also makes sharing teachers very difficult. So we're going to be doing some more of that, I'm sure. So those are some of the reasons that we're thinking about doing it. And addressing other concerns, part of adjusting to a 7-period schedule would be some directions to teachers on how often a week they should give homework and what days certain content areas should test, so you wouldn't have all your tests appearing on the same day. So that's part of the adjustment. And another point was also that for some classes, blocks are very, very, research shows them to be very, very poor. Mathematics is one. Skipping a day on your math is not usually very good. A foreign language is another. You need that daily content to contact in order to keep the ball rolling. So those are some of the reasons. So that's basically how the scheduling arguments start building up.
Thank you. No, that was great. Thank you.
Brad, did you also want to mention anything about just some of the, like the shop classes or like trying to maybe pencil some of those that could, you had mentioned that to me the other
day. Some of the classes, obviously, a longer period of time is better. In a shop class, for instance, where they're having to take out equipment, put equipment away and clean up and so forth. What we talked about doing there is allowing them to teach the full year schedule on semester length and have them back-to-back classes. So they do like a fifth, sixth of the same class. And then the next semester, they'd switch to completely different classes. It allows you to do a little bit of semi-block without affecting the entire schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the idea.
And yeah, conferences are, there's so many activities.
There was no way to make parent-teacher conferences work without conflicts. And so we just went with what we had, figured out from there. So.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. And I guess for activities, we can say that there's a lot of basketball that's going to be being played this weekend.
Starting tomorrow
at 5:30, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And then do we have middle school wrestling? They already traveled, didn't they?
Yep, they're done.
They're done.
Finished
okay.
Up regionals in Ketchikan.
Okay.
And then
volleyball starts soon.
That's true.
And NYO starts soon.
NYO and middle school ball, volleyball. So if you're if you have students interested in that, go ahead and look at the website. It'll give you the exact date, and then just contact the office about signing your child up and paying the fee. Okay, we'll move on to our committee reports. Crisis? No. Okay. Curriculum? Probably nothing yet.
Not much.
Facilities? Probably. Okay. Legislative liaison, which I feel like is right now, Erica and Mara, yes, keeping us up to date. Negotiations, we'll talk to the whole board in an executive session at the end of it, but we took this week off just due to schedules and activities, and we'll be resuming next week. Policy?
Just what's on the agenda.
Okay.
Currently.
Okay, no technology probably. Okay, and wellness, you guys are...
We did have a meeting.
That's what I was thinking it was, because...
And Carly kind of just went over some of the food service changes. They're changing how much sodium can go in food.
Always.
But she's got some nifty recipes. No fry bread is coming out. And yeah, she gets really excited about these things. You guys, it's really fun.
Figuring it out.
And then Jamie let us know that Kyle Worrell's coming to town here in the spring, who is he's from Juneau. He's an NYO. He holds the record for the seal hop. Super awesome athlete, but also really great with working with kids. So he's coming to do some stuff in PE, along with our NYO team. And then I did ask Jamie if he will have time to do a coach's training, and he said, yep, let's do it. So hopefully there'll be time for that as well. If anyone's interested in learning the skills that their kids take part in, it's a really great training. I highly recommend it. So great meeting. We have another one scheduled for the end of March, and our last one for the school year will be at the beginning of May. So that's kind of the high level overview. Oh, and then Teen Health Fair. We talked about that just a little bit. Ginger Evans is taken that up, and that's in May.
May 3rd.
May 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
So she's busy organizing all of that and getting ready to roll it out. Great.
Thank you.
I'm going to read this.
Go ahead.
Everybody gets their cards. Okay. So the Association of Alaska School Boards has declared February to be School Board Recognition Month. The goal is to build awareness and understanding in our community and schools of the crucial function an elected school board plays in a representative democracy. As citizen advocates, individual board members face a complex and often demanding job, yet few people fully understand the scope and far-reaching implications of board members' responsibilities. All Alaska citizens should recognize the important contributions of these men and women here and around the state and the country, and focus attention on the vital role these public officials play in the education of our children. Such deserved recognition can encourage veteran board members to continue to make the commitment board service requires. We have several veterans up here, as well as encourage other citizens to get involved in the schools and make positive changes. A full month allows local districts, PTAs, booster clubs, chambers of commerce, and other community organizations to organize potentially activities or just recognize you when they see you around town. So thank you all for your commitment and your service to our schools and our students. Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, we'll move on to old business, which is our policy 3430 investing. This is a new policy with language that allow for and provide guidelines to our director of finance regarding the investment of surplus monies from the general operating capital and special revenue funds. And I'm going to recess to public hearing for the testimony on this policy. Anybody want to testify about the policy? Go here. Seeing no one willing to jump up and talk about it or ask about it, we're going to end public testimony. And I'll make a motion to approve policy 3430, investing in the second and final reading.
I think we have an amendment we'd like to make.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
I believe it's in the third paragraph, and okay. It's just a numbering. I think it should be 1 through 5, correct? Yeah, instead of 1 through 4.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Do we have to finish our motion first, and then she makes another one?
No? I think so, actually.
Okay. Okay. To amend a motion to talk about it.
We made our
motion to talk about it.
And then we got out of that, right? So then we can. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so Carrie seconded the motion. Now we have a discussion to amend it.
Okay.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So that's just adding the authorization.
The language would be to
change here. Yeah, right there. One, yeah. So 1 through 4, I should say 1 through 5.
A 5.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it's a kind of a type of
thing. Just
okay.
Good catch.
I can't take credit for it. I was okay. Alerted to.
So I'll make a motion to amend BP 3430 investing to correct the numbers 1 through 5. A second?
I'll second that.
Motion is made and seconded. All those in favor of the amended the amended policy as changed, I guess.
Aye.
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 Opposed? Now do we vote for the new policy? Okay, so now we're going to vote for the or if we have any further discussion on it.
Yeah, you can go back to discussion or
if there's any other concerns or questions. Okay. I'll make a motion now to approve in the second and final reading of BP 3430. Could I have a second?
A second.
Okay, Jay seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion passes with the amended policy. Okay. Next, we'll move on to 17.1. We have our exempt contracts. They include our elementary principal, Heather Kahn, middle school, high school principal, Bradley King, special education director, Cindy Fry, food service director, Carly Johnson McIntosh, director of facilities and maintenance, Aaron Buller, director of finance, Shannon Baird, director of technology, John Clint Painter, athletic director, dean of students, Jamie Cabral, and our superintendent, board administrative assistant, Mara Latomsky. I will make a motion to approve all of the exempt contracts as listed. Could I have a second?
I'll second.
Motions were made and seconded. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none. Mara, could you please call the roll?
Yes. Charlotte Martin? Sarah Holmgren?
Yes.
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Carrie Case?
Yes.
Katie Holmland?
Yes.
Nicole Olson?
Yes.
Okay, motion passed. Next, we'll move on to 17.2, which is our certified tenured contracts for our teachers for the fiscal year 24-25 school year. This item is approved to offer all current tenured staff members a contract for the 2024-25 school year. The non-tenured staff list may be held until our teacher negotiations are settled. And we were given a list earlier. So I'll make a motion to approve the contracts for the current tenured certified staff for 24-25 school year as listed. Could I have a second?
I'll second.
Motion has been made and seconded by Carrie, and I think we have a list up for those that are in the room. Just kind of get an idea. Is any discussion? Go hearing none. Mara, please call the roll.
Charlotte Martin? Yes. Carrie Case?
Yes.
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes.
Nicole Olson?
Yes.
Katie Holmwood?
Yes. Motion passes. Next, we'll move on to 17.3, which is a resolution 2024-1 with the supporting the borough's bond. The Petersburg School District supports the borough's bond for the roof replacement project and on the state capital improvement list, and then the district-wide safety and security upgrades. I'll make a motion to approve the resolution. If I could have a second.
I'll second.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded, and we have a discussion. So as we talked about today during Campus Connections, is and for those, I feel like we say it a bunch of times, but sometimes it just doesn't always sink in, or you didn't hear it, is that the buildings aren't owned by the school district, they're owned by the borough, so we're asking them to bond, which is a mechanism for funding to replace roofs and major capital improvements that you can't get full funding from the state. Erica, you can probably go into a little more detail, or Erin even.
Yeah, and Erin is here if you have any sort of specific questions about the projects themselves. We've talked quite a bit about the process and the where the roof replacement project has made it to number 12 on the list. And so this is the process that when we met with Steve and Jody about a month ago, they wanted the board to adopt a resolution around this and what you support, what you're comfortable with, and we could talk through it more specifically. And then it would go to the assembly, and then it's for them to determine, you know, if they're going to go forward with that bond and put that language out and put it out for potentially then vote in the fall in October. One of the pieces that's important to know is that if that CIP project is funded, if the state, you know, if we make it down past number 12, then that means that we have a 65% reimbursement, and that comes back to the borough. And that's how we've funded many of our projects over the years. So the bonding could support that, and then they could see that money back. They could see $3 million of the $4.5 million for that roof project would then come back. And so that's kind of how the process works. There's a lot of whereas. I don't know if we should read it. Sometimes I feel like we should, but I don't know. There's a lot of information about the roof. There's information about the damage. It's been on our list for multiple years, and then it's on the borough's list as well. They put it at number 3 on their list also as a priority. It's number 1 on ours. And we've had the roof condition work done. We've been working with the architects and with our support person at CIRC, David Landis. And there's the information about the participating share for the CIP grant. That's 35%, $1.344 million. That is what the borough would need to have available. And then the reimbursement would then be the $3.1 million that could potentially come back if that gets funded. And we'll know about that on July 1st. So after the legislative session and the borough or the governor makes his decisions about whatever he's doing with vetoes and all the rest, and we'll know that if it makes it down to number 12, then that's really helpful for the borough to know as they're crafting, you know, what they want to potentially put out to the voters. The thinking then is that there's that huge $4.5 million project, but then there's also these upgrades related to safety and security, which is estimated to be $1.4 million. That's the remodel of this office area we've talked about for about a year and a half now. We've got some preliminary design work done. We would need to move forward with further design work, and then we have some estimates for what it would cost to do lock and security updates on the outer doors of the district, and then it would rework some of those door entryways. Some ADA compliance would be addressed at that time, so it would all happen. Once you dig into any of those, then you have to do it.
So we're proposing this, then we're sending a letter of support to this bond that includes the roof improvements as well as the safety and security.
Yes.
Okay.
And then they'll have to determine, you know, what they would be maybe proposing or putting together for a proposal to put out for bond. I don't know what their tolerance is for what they think, or what they think maybe the voters would vote for. The nice thing about these is the last time that they did one of these, which would have been 2004, that was the pool and the Votech buildings in there. Those have all matured. They will be maturing. And so this would be a new, this would be the next sort of new, so the timing is actually.
We wouldn't have double bonding.
We wouldn't have double bonding. You wouldn't be adding to something else that you're already sort of paying for. This would be, we're moving projects off, potentially moving projects on. So the last time when they did this, they handled it the same sort of way, because there was that reimbursement that came back for the pool afterwards and the Votech building. So it's basically trying to figure out, like, if you put it out to bond and this much gets funded, and we know at that point that $3 million of it's going to get returned, you know, reimbursed back to the district, or excuse me, the borough. We don't have $3 million that comes back to us, but then they could move down that list. They could move down this list and say, okay, now there is this available funding through the bond to now take care of the safety and security upgrades. So that's kind of how it works. And that's how they did that last time with the pool and all of that. And I don't know what other projects I don't know if they're going to want to put something else on there as part of the package as well. So that's for the borough to determine.
And maybe they'll be able to tell us, you know, what their thoughts are too, at that work
session. Yeah.
That's all related.
Yeah. So I think timing wise, all these things are good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a good time for it. So it's just kind of working out that way, which is great.
Okay. Any other discussion about the support? Okay. Motion's been made and seconded to approve the resolution 2024-1 borough bond. Mara, could you please call the roll?
Yes. Charlotte Martin. Katie Holmland.
Yes.
Nicole Olson.
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren.
Yes.
Carrie Case.
Yes.
Jay Lister.
Yes.
Okay, motion passes. Next, we'll move on to 17.4, which is investment of our savings account. This item, if passed, would permit the Director of Finance to invest the district savings account dollars following the new board policy 3430. The current savings account balance of $806,876.71 as of January 31st. If approved, this item will authorize the closing of the savings account and then investment of that full balance. I'll make a motion to approve the investment plan of the full balance of the savings account and closure of the account as presented, which our Director of Finance will present shortly. Could I have a second?
I'll second.
Motion's been made and seconded by Carrie, and now we'll bring us a little more. It feels backwards to make a motion, but then it allows us to discuss it.
And I'll keep this briefly after later about budget considerations. But I talked to you guys in January about, you know, maybe some options for investments, and the plan's actually really simple. It's not part of the approved language, but just going to invest it all with Alaska Municipal League investment pool, which Jody Taylor brought to our attention and suggested we add that language number 5 and 4. So thank you to her, and she's on the board and she's super knowledgeable about it. So I met with her last week, I think it was. It's actually the perfect option for us because everything's liquid. We could have the money in our checking account within 24 hours. So that's really reassuring, just with what funding's looking like from the state and all the unknowns in our future, especially over the next few years with, you know, will we be spending down our fund balance and need that money in our checking account? Maybe, you know, a 5-year step at our CD or bonds, you know, that we've been talking about before as an option. Maybe it's really not the best fit right now with what funding's looking like. And so did you have the website up? I did want to just, or I emailed it to you, but it's just amlipamlet.org. Yeah, AMLIP. So Alaska Municipal League, so municipalities and school districts can be a part of it. It's an investment pool, right? Susan earlier was talking about an insurance pool. So it just helps, you know, when we pull our money and our resources together, all the public funds. So if you scroll down, actually just on this homepage, we can see what the current, a little more, yep, keep going. Yeah, there we go. So you can see they have a series 1 and a series 2. You can see what those rates have been like recently as of February 16th. Series 1 is where I plan to invest the full savings account balance, the 800,000 plus. And right now they're, you know, at a 5.36%. So it's just, it's going to be available, like it would be in a savings account, or I could transfer it easily. But we're going to be seeing much better revenue on it than we are currently seeing in our savings account. So, you know, keeping it available, but we still want to try to generate a little bit of revenue to help offset all the raising costs in our general fund. And then I think I wanted to go, oh, if you want to go back up and then go to the, or it might even just be right there, the members tab. I don't know if anybody, you can also hop on the site, take a look at like kind of the, they have really good information on here on like series one and the series two. But just here, there's 88 members currently. And so a lot of municipalities, there's not many school districts that take part yet, but Jody and I, when we were talking, she was thinking, man, maybe we need to attend more of the like ELASBO type conferences and get more school districts, because I didn't even know anything about it until she brought it to my attention. So yeah, it's a great option for us with our, to be able to invest our public funds and totally protected, fully collateralized and insured. So very safe and available, and we'll be seeing a better return.
Seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, oh, thank you, Jody. Yeah, so pretty simple, easy plan.
Great.
Do you guys have any questions?
Thank you. Motion's been made and seconded to approve the investment plan for the full balance of the savings account and close the account as presented. Mara, can you please call the roll?
Charlotte Martin? Sarah Holmgren?
Yes.
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Carrie Case?
Yes.
Katie Holmland?
Yes.
Nicole Olson?
Yes.
Motion passes. Next, we'll move on to 17.5, which is our authorization to merge operating and student fundraising checking accounts. As far as the centralization of ASB accounts, this is the associated student body. This authorization would permit the Director of Finance to merge the student fundraised checking accounts, or ASB accounts, with the district's main operating checking account. The district will use fund accounting practices to track these funds separately, which is the practice used with all other funds in the district has. So I'll make a motion to merger of the ASB checking account into the main operating checking account. Could I have a second?
I'll second.
Motion's been made and seconded by Nicole. And any discussion? I can see the rationale on this one. It's like you're still keeping track of it as separately, but then you're not keeping track, reconciling as many accounts, and it's all together. Okay, great. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Motion's been made and seconded to approve the merger of the ASB checking account into the main operating checking account. Mara, could you please call the roll?
Charlotte Martin? Nicole Olson?
Yes.
Katie Holmland?
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes.
Carrie Case?
Yes.
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Motion passes. Next, we'll move on to 17.6, which is an adjustment to our existing superintendent contract adjustment. This action would adjust the superintendent's contract to allow her to cash out all of her accrued but unused vacation days, as she will not be able to use them as the needs of the district require her to be present during the transition to the new superintendent. So I'll make a motion to approve the contract adjustment to allow additional cash out of unused accrued vacation days. And a second?
I'll second.
Oh, motion's been made and seconded. Any discussion?
How many days are we talking about?
Was it 15? Okay. So otherwise, she normally would be taking a vacation probably in June, but she's going to stick around and help with the transition when our new superintendent shows up roughly about the 10th of June. So,
yeah. So this cash out would happen at the end, though?
But this in fiscal June. Year.
Yeah, the end year. Of the school year. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm,
yeah. Yeah. Any other comments or questions? Okay, motion's been made and seconded. Mara, could you please call the roll?
Charlotte Martin? Jay Lister?
Yes.
Katie Holmland?
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes.
Carrie Case?
Yes.
Nichols?
Yes.
Okay. Next, we'll move on to 17.7, which is our preliminary fiscal year 2025 budget considerations. This item is up for discussion. The superintendent finance director will provide an update on the fiscal year 25 budget process. Discussion items will include the legislative updates, funding sources and trends, current budget concerns, substantial increases in insurance costs, requests for the increased local contribution from the borough, and the need for increase in the BSA. So who wants to go first?
The substantial increases in insurance.
Well, I wonder about health.
That's well, such good news.
Did we get any news though on the health insurance? I know that she doesn't do our health insurance, so I knew not to ask her about that. So that's the only one that worries me.
USIC next week, do they usually have some info?
They might have some info next week. We're meeting with them next week. But.
Okay.
So anyway.
The CPI?
Yeah.
Yes. We're going to run through this one. Katie here, she's the, I think her title is Director of Management and Budget at Anchorage School District. She shared this out as a resource. Obviously, these numbers are looking at urban Alaska, but all over Alaska, we're feeling the same things, right? We're facing similar problems. So it's still a great overview of kind of some of the struggles we're dealing with. So if you want to scroll down, it just kind of highlights some of these, right? How much are these things going up into fiscal year 25? So, you know, household utilities, 11%.
Definitely too big for you guys sitting so close.
Okay.
It looks good.
Interesting that it dipped in 22 from 19. Sorry. I would have thought it was.
Yeah, I don't know what.
And then went back up, yeah.
And this is, you know, she's getting the data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. I don't know what all goes into it, but we're looking, at like 11% increase. You can just slide through these. Energy, 28%. Food and beverage, 22%. Recreation, 16%. Transportation, 34%. Motor fuel, 56%. Other goods and services, 32%. So supplies, materials, services, the things that we definitely came for here. Tuition, school fees, and childcare, 12%. Medical care, 30%. Contracted services, 18%. And all items averaged out to 18%. So this, I just wanted to share this. I actually just got shared out yesterday. And I was like, ooh, yay, thanks, Katie. We're spending more because everything costs more. And this is something everyone knows, inflation, say in the last few years. So it just kind of highlights some of that in Alaska terms. And if you want to keep going. So our purchasing power is greatly diminished. So 32% increase in other goods and services. Districts, that means we can purchase like 2/3 of the supplies today that we could with the same dollars from 2017, while seeing only a 1.6% reduction in ADM statewide. So these are state numbers, but that's what all districts are feeling, right? Yeah, much less purchasing power with about the same amount of students. There's one or two more slides. So that's just highlighting the enrollment gone down 1.58, so about 1.6% since 2017. That's not much, and when we're looking at such a decrease in purchasing power. And this is the State of Alaska Department fiscal year 25 budget comparison. So an increase, these are what these different departments have increased since fiscal year 17, the percentages. And then all the way over on the right, so it's just so hard to look at even, is K through 12 aid to districts is at a negative 3.4% since fiscal year 2017. So not only is our dollar going, you know, not as far, right, with purchasing power and inflation, we have seen a reduction statewide in funding. Where, for those of you listening and aren't looking in, this will be attached to minutes, we can attach this. But the Department of Commerce has seen, or sorry, Department of Corrections, abbreviated, has seen a 42.6% increase, public safety, 69.4%, fish and game, 21.7%, Natural Resources is 33%, Governor's Office 23.3%, Legislator 25.7%, and then Deed Operations 19.5%. So Deed is the Department of Education and Early Childhood Development. So they're who manages the districts and our funding, and they've seen a 19.5% increase since 2007 or fiscal year 17. We've seen a negative 3.4. That's just hard to look at. So this is just great information for you to have. As they were talking about earlier, if you're thinking about calling into your legislators, this is very important information. Mm-hmm. And if you're wanting more information, we're happy to provide it.
And I will just piggyback as we're going through this, but Dan Ortiz actually referenced this very slide when Heather and I were in Juneau, and Representative Hemshoot wanted to introduce us in the gallery, or, you know, she asked us to, anyway. And he stood up during that when they have their moments to speak and make comments or whatever, and he referenced that particular statistic related to the Department of Corrections 42.6% increase and a negative 3.4. So
in the intervention years.
Right. So he was, and actually what he said was, he said, I'm putting my own culpability out there because I've been on this finance committee for several years, and I don't know how this has happened. So it was, anyway.
While we're still on the slide, if we had seen that same 19.5% increase to the BSA since 2017, the BSA was $5,930 in fiscal year 2017. If we saw that same increase, the BSA in fiscal year 25 would be $7,086.35, which for our district, with the projections we've been looking at for the next 20 years, would mean that we wouldn't have to make cuts. And we also wouldn't have to deplete our fund balance, which is, you know, deficit spending. Your spending expenditures over the revenue that you're getting that year. So yeah, that 9.5% versus the negative 3.4. So that's a big deal, and a good talking point to take away with you. We'll jump over into the presentation that I had prepared, but I was really happy with the timing of that being shared out yesterday. So we had to use that as well. So we're just and this will also be shared in the minutes for those of you listening, if you're wanting to see some of this that we're talking about. We can go next slide, and I'll let Erica take this one.
Okay, so these are some of the things that I just referenced a little bit in my initial report. I kind of want to read through a little bit of this at the beginning, just to let you know kind of how crazy things are right now, sort of. So just yesterday, so House 4 began their session hearing SB 140. That's the one that had been, that's a committee substitute for the, which started as Internet for Schools. So just keep that in mind. The version of Senate Bill 140 moved from House rules included provisions to allow Deed to authorize charter schools to increase funding for correspondent schools and only a $300 increase to the BSA. And to back up, the Deed part of that with the charter schools exist right now. And by the way, they are public schools. So they already are public schools. They're part of our public school system. But what the proposal from the House has been that they want that the charters to be able to bypass local school boards and go right to the state board for approval rather than having local control, which is something that I think our democracy is based on. So the adoption of the House rules version of SB 140 failed to be adopted by the House on a 2020 split. This was yesterday. And several of the people that voted no on it weren't necessarily opposed to some of the things in the bill, but they said, we don't know all the fiscal implications because this Senate Bill 140 has turned into a Christmas tree bill where everybody just started putting stuff into it in January, and it's not been costed out. It hasn't been run through finance. So by voting not to adopt that version, the House minority is prioritizing the needs of education in Alaska, which are BSA, increased pupil transportation, and internet access, which again, reminder, just started as internet access. The options forward now, like as of this morning, are for the House to rescind their earlier adoption vote, adopt the House finance version of SB 140, adopt the original version, or let the bill die. That's where it is right now. So the House finance version of SB 140, which was the one that was passed last May, that included that 680 BSA increase, an increase to pupil transportation by 7.3 million, and increased that bag grant cap to 100 megs. So that's designed to equalize sort of the playing field for our remote villages, which are at like anywhere from 15 to 25 megs.
Oh, you
can't run a toaster. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. It is not equitable in the state. So that's the kind of thing that's going on right now. Other bills to watch, that SB 88 I referenced, this was something that actually had been brought forward last year. Senator Giesel, there's several people that are all help sponsor it, but she's really on this. And this is this look back at trying to work on this retirement issue, this defined benefit retirement issue, not just for teachers, but for state employees in general, firemen, all state employees, because it's become such an issue for recruitment and retention. It doesn't go back to sort of the original quote unquote tier two type model, but it expands options for people and it broadens what they can have access to for retirement, for a pension. SB 200, that is something that Senator Stedman and I think Hoffman or Olson, I can't remember. Senator Stedman does not like SB 88. He has voted against it. He's trying to look at something different, a different approach to it. He's looking at the TERS, which is the Teacher Retirement System Contribution Rate, and also a PERS Social Security rate. It is not going to bring as much to our public employees as SB 88 would. HB 247, that's Representative Story. She was on the school board for years, if you remember her in Juneau, a long time. And mm-hmm. So she's just become, she's a new legislator. And one of the bill that she has brought forward the intent is to provide some measure of funding for the reading intervention plans for the READS Act. So she got the idea from other states that have done this, that have, mm-hmm. you know, have implemented similar legislation. And she doesn't have it all fleshed out. She's actually asking for feedback from people and we're working with her on that. Right now it's like $1,000 would be put toward any reading intervention plan that's identified. When we're not exactly sure if it's at the very beginning of the year, does it happen if a student is identified in the middle of the year, like what does that look like? And then we met with her Friday about it and just said, so what does that mean? Can it be used for staffing? Can it be used for support? Can it be used for whatever? The districts could determine how to use it toward supporting the work that's going into the reading intervention plan. So those are a few of the education bills that are, you know, kind of happening. There's others, but those are just some that I'm kind of involved with more.
Is HB 247 more along for schools that are in the READS Act improvement plan?
Nope, it's for any, it would be for any district, any student that would be identified in that, the high need area, and what that might look like. Yeah, other states have done similar legislation. Okay. So that's where she got the idea.
Okay.
So there's that. And that link is a pretty good link. That's the Alaska Council of School Administrator Legislative Update link. And it's a tab to keep. They do a pretty good job keeping it updated. And they're more focused on education.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Erica. So we get updated this chart every year, and at the bottom it's kind of cutting off, but it goes all the way to fiscal year 25 now. Actually, no, sorry, the next one does. This one goes to 24. So this that line that's going, you know, down, trending down through the pencils, that is the adjusted value of the BSA in each of these years. Those years. Right, like fiscal year 20, fiscal year 21, it's that BSA adjusted for inflation. So like off of fiscal year 2012, using that as the base. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So as you can see, our dollars not getting us near as high up the pencil used to the BSA.
Legislators do not like the pencil chart. They curse the pencil chart when we bring it around.
And they highlight, well, EXO puts these out, they highlight in that box at the top, you know, they highlight inflation adjustment for fiscal year 12 value of the BSA of fiscal year 24 of 5,960. You know, the value of that is $4,682. So, yeah.
Pretty big step backwards.
That makes sense.
So the next slide. It's another pencil chart, but it looks at but it's looking at what the BSA since 2017 and where it would be if it was keeping up with inflation. So as you can see highlighted in that box up top again, is the BSA if it had kept up with inflation since 2017 as the benchmark in this case. In fiscal year 25, our BSA would be $7,373. That's very different from what it's being proposed to be. And that, just going back to that slide from what was distributed from Katie Parrott at Anchorage School District, if we had adjusted like that 19.5% since 2017, we would be at $7,086.35. So that's still 19.5% still wouldn't be a bet. We would be a lot closer. We're way off mark. And there has been one-time funding, and you can see them noted on top of the pencils. There has been, you know, one-time funding over the BSA fiscal year 24, the year we're in right now. They called it $340 increase to the BSA, one-time increase. It shook out to a little less than that. That's okay. But that's not making up the deficit between 5,960 and 7,373. So that is not making up enough. we're grateful for it still. It still helps, but it's one-time funding also. It's not something we can count on and built into the BSA that then, you know, it's growing. It's one time, it's not stable. We can't count on it. It's not reliable.
And then
it's not enough.
Oh, sorry. And the other thing is just to keep in mind this line talking about the BSA itself. Part of, I mean, this whole point is that when it is outside, it never increases that factor. It just doesn't move it at all. So then you never know what that will be. Like Shannon's saying, it's that one-time thing that you find out June 30th. Well, we're well past it. We're putting out contracts. Yeah. We're trying to figure out how many positions we have and what else we need to cut. And do we buy this? Do we buy that? How much do we cut this maintenance budget or whatever? And we'll do those things. But that's really, this one really shows that part of it. It just, it doesn't increase that actual, the actual factors in there. So you just cannot, we can't count on any of that from year to year. So, okay.
Yeah, we need
a $30 in the BSA. Since 2007.
2017,
$30. $30 more.
That was for, that's for the Reeds Act, remember.
Oh.
For the Reeds Act. Make that pay. A reading specialist on $30.
Yeah, so these are great. These, you know, EXO puts them out. They'll be in the slides. They're a really easy way to highlight what we're dealing with. We'll move on. Another big part of, you know, what makes up our funding is our enrollment, enrollment trends. In the last 13 years, it's kind of been fluctuating between 426 and almost 470. So it hasn't, you know, we're not in a trend of all going down or all up. And the last time we were trending down was during COVID. We have rebounded from that, which is great. But we also, our projection for next year, it's looking like we'll have less students in this year, but right, it's all a guessing game. These are projections. Not something we know until our student count in October next year. And that's what our funding is based off of. So another factor at play.
Can I ask a question? Yeah. So last year, when we had this discussion at this time, we estimated kind of conservative numbers.
Yes.
And then were pleasantly surprised in October. Mm-hmm. Is that still using a conservative estimate? Or is that
454? No. That's pretty accurate. We've tried to literally find out how many
kinders we've got coming in.
Okay. And anybody that might be moving.
And,
And I'll probably base a budget off of 450 to be a little conservative, but I mean, we don't know who's moving in or out of Petersburg right. or what people are doing. And
pretty small graduating class, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And a small incoming kindergarten.
Yeah. Okay.
Too. But there's some other students that we know
mm-hmm.
are moving or have moved that mm-hmm. have changed from the 469.
Okay.
Already.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll still, you know, want to budget conservatively because this is, even if people start off the school year, I mean, the count period's in October.
Mm-hmm.
People. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. move for all reasons. Yeah, this is not maybe the thing, as you can see, we've been fluctuating within that for 13 years. This isn't the thing that's making us feel the pinch. I just want to reiterate, it's the BSA that's bringing us to this fiscal cliff that a lot of districts have already reached and gone over. COVID, you know, and other things held us off, but this is a big factor, right? The student count is, but it's the BSA that's the really big issue for us. So this is those two things coming together to give us our state funding. So our state foundation plus one-time funding in from 028 to now been fairly flat. But you can see the one-time funding also on top of it. So the blue bar in the column is just the BSA, right? Because we can't count on anything more than that, and we don't know what the next year will bring. There has been one-time funding outside of that. And so you can see the actual total in state foundation plus one-time funding at the very top in black for those years. We did go into hold harmless in fiscal year 21 because we saw more than a 5% drop in our ADM. And we were in that for 3 years. We're now no longer in hold harmless, and we've also had our ADM recover. So that's great. If it hadn't recovered, then we just would have been out of hold harmless. And it's a way to step down so we don't feel the loss of that funding all at once. But if we hadn't had a ADM that rebounded, then we would now be realizing the full hurt of losing those students. But ours rebounded, and that's great. And as we said before, you know, those years, fiscal year 21, 22, and 23, those were probably mostly due to COVID. Hopefully stays 450 or higher. The next slide, we're gonna look at the borough's contribution. It was 1.8 million from 2001 to 2022. It stepped up to 2 million for fiscal year 23. And then last year they answered our ask and gave us $3 million for fiscal year 24, which is so appreciated and needed. This year we're requesting a full 3.4, which is like at what we think our cap will be, the max that the state would even allow them to contribute. And the minimum contribution will probably be around 1.5, just for reference. The borough also provided an additional $200,000 in deferred maintenance back in fiscal year 23 that we're still spending. We're going to spend the rest of this fiscal year. We spent most of it. Aaron's been, oh, he's gone now. Doing a good job of that. And the school district has like 100% facility maintenance upgrades since 2017 been funding in the school buildings. So that's LED upgrades, upgraded fuel storage tank, boiler upgrades, middle high school entry renovation, counselor office reno. So yeah, just kind of looking at like where that money's been going.
Can I ask two questions on this slide? Do you guys know of the other districts in Southeast specifically, but also within the state, which boroughs are not funding to the maximum?
I think that, I don't think that Craig funds to the cap. I think they were comparable to us or less. They fund mostly from timber receipts as well. They also have, they're sort of a unique district because they have the PACE homeschool there, the
mm-hmm,
correspondence.
Mm-hmm.
They have like three times as many, or I don't know.
They have 660 students.
Yeah, that are enrolled in that. And then they have like
220 physical students.
Yeah, physical
students.
Oh my
goodness.
So it's like a weird.
Yeah.
And the funding is not the exact same on correspondence programs, but they're getting a lot of funding.
They get 0.9. They get 0.9.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, really?
That's helping them out a lot.
It does.
Yeah. But Wrangell, Juneau, Sitka,
yeah,
As far as we know, they're all funding to the maximum.
It's like kind of saying, how can we fund more? Why can't we fund more?
So the other issue to consider in this that is, and if you did listen to the piece that they did on the Sitka School and the borough and all that, one of the things they did clarify in that, and we've talked about this a bit here, but that whole conversation about funding beyond the cap, it after this next year will be the last year that that's even allowed. We've never had that, so it's not, we're not having to figure out how to ratchet a bunch of things back, but Sitka has funded beyond, Juno has funded beyond, Skagway's funded beyond, they've taken things like activities, preschool, stuff like that.
They call it outside the cap, because it's been contributions to other funds.
Yeah.
Getting creative with that funding.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, like.
But that will be no more.
Not allowed after next year.
Yeah.
Out of our general fund, because the state doesn't fully fund reimbursement.
Right.
Funded it, they haven't since 2004, so like that has been an area that other communities have been, you know.
Yeah, they've said we'll pay the difference on pupil transportation, or we'll.
Yeah.
Make up the difference on food service or whatever those things are, and so that's not been the case here.
And then can I also ask about, so these are borough-owned buildings, but the school is 100% funding the facility maintenance and upgrades since 2017.
Yeah, non-major capital stuff, right?
Okay.
The major, like roof, but the, still some significant projects.
Because that was another piece of the Sitka discussion, because don't they have a similar relationship where their borough owns the buildings as well?
They do, and what they're negotiating right now in Sitka, or they've brought forward, is they're talking about Sitka borough essentially taking over.
Yeah.
Literally all.
Fuel.
All maintenance.
Utilities, everything.
The whole thing for the buildings there, so.
Yeah.
The conversation that they're.
Yeah.
They're having.
And that wouldn't be a problem in their loophole issue.
No, because they own.
They have their own buildings.
Buildings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They'll probably still have to, I don't know for sure, but they'll probably still have to recognize some sort of benefit as an in-kind. As both a revenue and expenditure, like a wash on their accounts. But it'll probably be cheaper for them and better on their books than paying for the full expense. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that might be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the next one just kind of highlight, the next slide highlights, right, the COVID money that we're coming to the end of. The last one is the purple that we're spending the last of this year. We're not spending all that this year, but that's the only pot of COVID money that we're still spending on, is the ARP ESSER 3 funds. So that's been a huge thing that's been keeping us from the fiscal cliff, right? We've kind of been helping to subsidize, supplant things a little bit. Things that would be in the general fund otherwise as expenses. So that's been helping us, which is great, but right, it's not an increase to the DSA, so it's not funding we can count on in the future. This is going away. All right, next. So budget impacts, and that, you know, we're seeing increases to facility and fixed costs of buildings, you know, utility and heating fuel costs. I will note that our usage is less than last winter, which is great.
It's significant.
Well, it's been very warm.
It's great.
When rates are going up,
that's a good thing.
That just becomes a lot. We're still grateful for it, the cost, but
There's that cyber insurance.
Yeah, increase in property and liability insurance for fiscal year 24. Susan's saying it'll look better next year, so that's great if we don't have to recognize a huge increase for next year. She whispered to me over there, you know, maybe still budget for a 10% increase just to be safe. We don't know how this is going to wash out, so we'll budget appropriately and conservatively, but be great if property was flat. We didn't see any increase, that'd be amazing. But cyber insurance has been a huge one in the last few years. If it didn't have a huge increase or was flat, that would be wonderful, but it was certainly a big increase into fiscal year 24. So those are costs that we're realizing, and we'll be keeping those costs, but hopefully not adding to them too much for insurance. An increase in auditing costs, that was really significant and a bit of a surprise to Erica and I this year. We knew, right, those costs go up every year, but the billable hours were much more than usual. Part of that is probably because a lot more back and forth with me as I'm learning the process and what form and format do you want that in, and what are you even asking?
It was not $27,000.
But
And we did try to fight it.
Yeah, we did fight, and they did reduce the final bill some because they also had a team that that was new to some of the things that they were auditing. So some of those extra billable hours are on them. So they did front, I think they reduced, well, I don't want to misquote, but it, like 7 or 8, they took off the final bill, but they had already written off some hours because they had already said, like, some of these are on our learning curve. Anyway, that should be less next year. That should not be, we should see a decrease in our auditing costs.
Those are total for auditing costs, at auditing costs. Shoot.
Almost.
That. Oh, I'm sorry, I don't have that in front of me, but.
Oh, it was more than that.
Yeah, I think it
was. Good gracious.
Oh. Wow. Yeah,
because last annual salary.
Last year it was like.
Terrible. Yeah.
But, did they do a year's worth of work?
I don't think so. And aren't we sharing some of, getting somewhat of a break because we're using the same auditing firm as the
borough? They bring one, like, right, lead person and two teams to do us and the,
oh, okay,
the borough at the same time. And I like working with them a lot. They're wonderful, super professional. They did a great job. But yeah, I guess learning curve for us all this year, and that was definitely a big increase. We did not expect it to be that much more. We budgeted for an increase in the budget revision in December, but not that much, so.
And we are hearing that from other districts as well. It was, there was a sticker shock for everybody.
Wonder about the borough this year. How much should they get nailed for?
That I don't know.
If you'd like, I can get you.
No, you don't have to. Just ask Jody next time this year.
All right. Other impacts to the budget, salary increases, 1% on our classified staff for their, is part of, built into their CBA for next year. Also, they'll be getting, you know, some step movement, which is an additional increase in costs and benefit to them. And we're under negotiations right now with ATP, our certified teaching staff, and that'll be an increased cost in the budget. Health insurance, that we have an increase of 5.5. from fiscal year 23 to 24. I'm hoping it's not more than that in the fiscal year 25, but I doubt it would be less, just the way some of those things are going. So I think we could probably use that as a pretty good figure for now until we get some numbers from USI and PHT. And okay, yeah, we'll move on to the next one. Great. This is just a highlight of utilities and heating fuel. So the utilities, our borough utilities, are in blue, and then heating fuel is in red.
But that's through January.
Okay.
Our utilities.
But for these others, are these for the full fiscal year?
Yes, correct. Okay. Those are actual costs, audited final costs of fiscal year 21, 22, and 23. Mm-hmm. So rates and fiscal year 23 was high usage and rates, right? Rates have gone up again, so even though we have less usage, we are probably going to end up very similar in the end for borough utilities to last year, might be about flat. Fuel, we might be less. That would be great, because that's the big part. That's how we mostly heat the buildings, and it's been a warmer winter, so we might have less expenses in heating fuel.
Yeah.
Fiscal year 24 from 23, which would be wonderful. I hope it shakes out that way. Okay, and the next slide, just looking at, you know, we've been talking about fund balance a lot. Well, the governor sure has, and the legislator too. I don't know if everyone listening at home has been in on the conversation, but so fiscal year 2018, you know, we had like a 9.47 fund balance, and that's our fund balance over our expenditures for the year. So it was really high, right, in those COVID years, and we were allowed to carry over more than 10%. That is sunsetting at the end of fiscal year 25. So that means fiscal year 25 to fiscal year 26 is the last time that we'll be able to carry more than 10%. So at the end of this fiscal year, 24, and then at the end of fiscal year 25. And it's absolutely our goal to try to do that. Right now we're at less than 10%. And in our audited financial statements, our overall fund balance is more than that. the for fiscal year 23 and for all of these. This takes out prepaids because prepaids don't count as part of that because it's actually money that's already been spent, but it's been spent on expenditures for the next fiscal year, right? Like we prepay insurance, a lot of there's quite a few expenses that you prepay. So that takes out prepaids in that calculation and that portion of the fund balance. Just to, while we're on the subject of fund balance, I do want to note, we want to protect our fund balance. We, you don't get a new one each year, right? It carries forward from one year to the next. And if we depleted it, it would be very hard to build it back up. You would have to have more revenue than expenditures in your budget in order to add anything to your fund balance, right? Which obviously we did here in some COVID years, but looking at funding from the state and where things are going the next few years, that would be very, very difficult. And we have to really think long-term when it comes to our fund balance. We don't think we're gonna be getting the increase to the BSA that we need. So it's there like right for protection and to use when you have to budget your balance balance your budget, but we can't do that every year because then it's gone. So we have to do our best to keep that there because it's also your protection for when things don't go as planned and large expenses come up. Write a budget to plan and then life happens. So I just really want to reiterate that we want to try to carry 10% fund balance whenever we can. Once that in excess of 10% goes away, we want to try to get to that. That is a healthy picture. It's, 1 month of expenses, really, when you have something happen, like that's not much. And when our funding is always decided after we've already, taken on the liability of staff contracts and expenses and you've made your plans, we already have the liability of all the expenses. We have to protect that fund balance. Some budget considerations, kind of summarizing some of that revenue. We are requesting 3.4 million from the borough. That is an increase of 400,000 from what we're getting this year. We also need additional state funding. We did get one time increase to the BSA this year, but right, it's one time, it's not built into the BSA. So we need at least equivalent to that going into next year, which last year, for this fiscal year 24, is 340 over. Expenditures, if we had like a status quo, we kept our programs and our staff, we can't afford that even if we got 3.4 and the same funding that we did, 3.4 from the borough and the same funding from the state that we do have this year. We cannot afford the increase to costs. Our dollar doesn't go as far. So we're looking at reductions. Obviously we do not want to get rid of people. So we are going to reduce in supplies, materials, and everywhere else that we can first, but you can only do so much of that. And it's a smaller part of expenditures, whereas staff and our salaries and benefits, the whole staff, everybody makes it up over 3/4 of the total budget. So we're looking at reducing possibly $50,000 in health services. That's mental health and nurse services. Reduce maintenance supplies, reduce supplies and travel district-wide, recycle student laptops and cancel the refresh for students, because MacBooks are very expensive and I don't, maybe we can't afford to keep that up anymore. We're hoping to reduce pool use and in turn reduce our share of the utilities. That's going to be dependent on the borough agreeing to that. And then, unfortunately, we're going to have to reduce some staff.
And we don't know exactly what that will look like. We're putting that there as a placeholder in the sense that there's a dollar figure attached to staffing. So whatever that ends up looking like, we don't know if people are retiring. We don't know if people are moving on to different jobs. Those are all the things that make this messy. The conversation about the pool and the utilities there, that's the long-standing strange relationship that we have for funding.
Yeah, we currently pay 100% of the utilities at the aquatic center and the gym all year round. 100% of the year, 100% of the bill. So that's our share of costs in those facilities.
Yeah. So we're trying to work with we want to discuss that next week. We brought it up to Steve and Jody also, just like what are the things that have to happen? What are the things that don't have to happen? What are things that might be an opportunity for the borough to provide support? As we said, we're coming off of that. The way that was funded, we've talked about this before, is that, you know, it's a community pool, but it was able to be funded as a deed project, just like the roof was. So that's great that people figured that out in 2004 and made that happen, but it's a community pool. So that conversation needs to be had. We need to talk about that. And we know it's not a moneymaker. It's not a moneymaker for the borough. It's like the library. I mean, it's a service, right? It's not a money-making place. Thinking about reductions, we have some ideas around that. We have some ideas for sizes of classes potentially. We may be able to pool up some of our students into groups. Our goal is to try to keep people and programs, because programs are people. So when we say, well, you can just get rid of the swim program and people will just have to deal, well, it's not that simple. That's people, and it's programs, and it's something that's been very valuable and important program in our community on living on an island. So those are larger community conversations about priorities. So I think there's some ways to be creative with some of these things. But once you get through, I think we said this today at noon, you get through the quote unquote easy things, like, yeah, okay, we'll recycle laptops, we'll do this. And you can float on some of those things for a couple of years, you know, how that goes. You can reduce things, you can use different equipment. We've put a lot of time and effort into our infrastructure. That's good. I mean, that's a good thing. We're in good shape with our internet. Our infrastructure is good, and we've made good use of E-rate funding and all those kinds of things to try to do that. Those are the easy things, though. Those are things that are $40,000 or $50,000. They're not nothing. I'm not diminishing them, but I'm just saying, once you you can only go so far with maintenance supplies. You can only go so far not purchasing textbooks, or, you know, those are the things that you could put off for a bit, but you can't put them off forever, and they're not big ticket items. So just to be perfectly blunt, they're not. So
next slide. Here are like the projected program costs of some of these programs. The swim program, you know, over a quarter million. Activities are at, you know, 460,000 and change, and our shop CTE, these are all right. We all love these programs, and they're great for our kids. They keep them engaged and involved and healthy, and they're a part of education. Shop CTE program, 156,000. The laptop program, it says zero there because we're already anticipating that we would not do a laptop refresh for next year. So that normally is 48,000. That's what would have been budgeted for next year. And maintenance and custodial supplies, classroom teaching supplies, 48,000, curriculum, 36,000 and change. So just cost of some of those programs, and some staff is a part of some of those programs too. But some of those programs we can't cut much out of, right? You look at classroom teaching supplies and curriculum, well, there's not much that we can cut there. Can't have nothing for supplies and materials for our classrooms, can't have nothing for curriculum. So looking at what those actual costs are, really.
So the bulk of that swim program cost figure there is the utilities that we pay?
Utilities, teacher,
Parapro.
And okay. The full cost of the para and the teacher are not realized in there because they also help in other areas of programs.
Yeah, there's some overlap, that's true.
Yeah, so the swim, but just the utilities are a little under 190,000 for the aquatic center alone.
For the year?
Yes, for okay. the year. The gym is much more or less expensive, right? You're not heating a bunch mm-hmm. of water. So it's the aquatic center that's the big ticket item. Yeah, for utilities. So the next slide, summarizing some more, it is inevitable that we will have to make some significant budget cuts. Even if we used up all of our, right, not that we would want to, but if we used up all of our fund balance to not make cuts 1 year, well, then it's gone and we'd have to make even bigger cuts the next year. So it's inevitable that we will have to make budget cuts for the next 3 years if funding from the state does not change drastically. Even if we do get full funding from the borough, because they're capped. I mean, there's a max that they're allowed to even contribute. And that's also based on our basic need that's in the foundation formula from the state. So the max that they can contribute is based on the BSA number too. So if the BSA went up, then the borough, everyone could contribute more. So that BSA, that really needs to increase. COVID funds, grant opportunities that have been taken advantage and strategic reductions have kept us from going over the fiscal cliff. But we're, you know, a lot of districts have already been there and we're not exempt from it, right? We're dealing with the same types of issues that other districts in Alaska are. And so we're gonna have to deal with this same issue, unfortunately. And the next slide, just kind of going back over district needs. We need an increase of 400,000 from the borough. That really is a need, even if we receive one-time funding from the state, similar to this year. COVID funds are gone, fluctuating enrollment, right? We don't know that until October of the year, the funding year. Hold hard unless provision is over, but our enrollment luckily bounced back. We need that local max contribution, and we need additional state funding. And we're gonna have to make strategic reductions to the general fund expenditures, unfortunately. Any questions?
Pretty sobering.
Yeah, it's hard. And you know, we have to look at what might happen. You know, maybe in a couple years, maybe the state does increase BSA and finally get it together and get it to pass. And but we have to look at, okay, what do we have to do for next year? What might we have to do for the year after that? You have to be looking at least 2 years out, kind of, you know, you don't want to get too scared by a few years down the road because, okay, we have time to figure it out and see how some things shake out. But we do have to be strategic about any for the future that's coming.
Yeah, and the cliff that some of the other districts have gone over, I mean, I don't know really how you get back out of
no that. People are in debt, and
June was talking about getting a loan
balance.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the same with their health insurance. They're looking for $4 million.
Yeah,
they owe $4 million to their borough for health insurance they haven't been paying. They're in debt to their borough. They haven't been able to afford to pay their staff's health insurance. So
their contribution part, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Shannon. Any other comments or questions? Okay, we'll move on to additional comments from board members. Okay, up to upcoming dates and media announcements.
There's a play next week.
Yes, it's kind of a funny schedule because of games.
Conferences,
yeah.
And games. Oh. Yeah. So Thursday, Saturday, Sunday.
And Sunday's matinee.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. You can always check the school website at pcsd.us and go under activities and pull up the calendar and you'll be able to find pretty much everything. You've got games this weekend if you're looking for something starting on Wednesday, tomorrow. So it's a lot still going on before we head to spring break before we know it. Okay, any future agenda items? Nothing that's unusual yet. Okay, other new business? Okay. I will make a motion to recess to executive session, discuss matters of the immediate knowledge of which have, would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of the district, more specifically the certified teacher negotiations.
I'll second.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded, and I guess we could vote to go into executive session. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Under an executive session. Yeah. I was gonna cough. I was just gonna cough the whole meeting. And I didn't have, yeah, I was looking for the Listerine things. Those usually help me.
Chocolate doesn't.